It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
There we go.
What's the thing? What's going on?
We're on.
We're on what?
Hey. The podcast. The other universe.
We're doing the podcast?
Yes.
I thought I was over here for that other thing we do on Thursdays.
No. It's not even Thursday here. We don't even have Thursday in this universe. You just made up a word that doesn't even exist.
No, Thursday.
All right.
We have Thursdays. Oh, wait. No. We've been doing this too long.
No shit.
Because, you know, now I'm starting to get their things mixed up with our things. Do we have to keep doing this?
Yeah. They paid me $10. And they paid you $10, which I'm holding. That's not true.
Let's not even get into that again.
Hello. What's that beeping?
I don't know.
Baby, are you beeping?
My movie is.
Mark, it's I Am Legend. Anyway, hello. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world that's like a warm hug, but from a friend of the family who's a little older than you and you're kind of attracted to, but you've grown up with, and so it's, you know, it could never happen. So it's like long. And in some ways you like it, but it's kind of creepy, and you feel bad afterward. That kind of, that's what this is.
Yeah, that's exactly what this is.
Yeah, totally.
That's
this podcast. So
yeah,
welcome. We have no idea when it is or where it is or who it is, because we only show up when the other fuckers die, or sleep or whatever.
Well, let's hope they don't die, because then we have to do this all the time.
Oh, that would suck.
Yeah. We've already talked about this.
Yeah. Anyway, for those of you just joining for the first time, those other fuckers have a hat. It's magical. Has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. You should write it. People write it. Listeners write it with questions, comments, topics. The hat, on its own, turns those emails into little note cards with the information written on it that show up inside of the hat. And those other two losers pull those out and read them and talk about them until they're bored, and then they do that for about an hour. When they are unable to fulfill their duties, we, as some sort of weird interdimensional runner-up to the Miss America pageant, must step in and take their place. We are the Tony and William from a different dimension.
Evil dimension.
Evil, sorry, we're evil.
We have goatees. The producer has a goatee.
The producer has a goatee. The microphones have goatees.
Yeah. Ezzy has a goatee.
Ezzy has a goatee.
Your goatee is over your beard.
I have a goatee over the top of my beard.
Yep.
Your hat has a goatee.
Yep. It's just the thing over here.
Yeah.
I don't know why people make such a big deal out of it.
One of the major aspects that people don't consider is in this universe, we don't really like pizza that much. Because, for you to understand, imagine all the pizza you ate had a goatee on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not good. Anyway, so
you just, you just have to think.
So we step in when they can't do it, because
we don't know why.
No, we just do. So here we are.
Here I think we're getting together for some other reason and it's this.
Yes.
So that's disappointing.
It's like magic. Really shitty magic.
I don't know if there's any other kind, to be honest. But oh well.
I think it's basically shitty magic and the laughter of a child. Those are the two kinds. Some would argue all one kind, but the point is.
I get you.
I think the official designation is shitty magic, laughter of a child.
And saying you, what is it you do when you believe? You clap your hands or what do you do?
I don't know. I don't believe.
There's something you're supposed to do when you believe.
I don't believe I know.
Anyway, let's do this hat thing.
Do you remember when Lucky Charms only had 5 marshmallows?
Let's see. Pink hearts, yellow moons, orange stars, green clovers, and blue diamonds.
Yes. And the cereal that went with it was essentially Cheerios.
So then they had purple horseshoes.
They had purple horseshoes. They eventually had red balloons.
Red balloons?
Yes, I think they still have red balloons. At some point they put little rainbows in there, little pots of gold in there, but I think both of those may only be limited time things. They eventually said, fuck it, and switched to blue moons, so yellow moons and blue diamonds are both just screwed. Now you have blue moons. And, at some point, they frosted all the other cereal.
You know, they do have this cereal over there, but over there it's not made of meat.
Yeah.
We should remind people of that. Why should we care what they think about it, though?
Also,
why did I even bring that up?
Also, the cereal has a goatee, so it's pretty shitty.
Yeah, that goes without saying.
We're not big on eating over here.
It's something I noticed about the cereals over there. They're made of grain.
But what's really horrific...
But here they're made of meat.
...is when we go to the bathroom.
Please don't.
Because of the goatees.
Please don't. Don't do that. Cereal.
It's what's for dinner.
I just think it's weird that they have, like, it's made of, like, corn and stuff. Corn! Maybe corn's different here than it is there.
That would have to be.
Yeah.
I wouldn't make cereal out of corn here.
I don't think anyone would make anything out of corn.
I wouldn't feed corn to pigs / cows.
Well, over here we...
/ chickens.
Here we feed pigs to corn. So that's probably part of it.
That sounds really deep somehow.
What?
Like, speak truth to power, feed pigs to corn.
It's just weird over there is what I'm saying. And I don't... You're right. You always pick on me because I know so much about over there. And because I listen to the podcast to see what these guys are about because they annoy me. And I feel like if I understand them, maybe we can destroy them or something. But then I just end up learning a whole bunch of things about that side of the universe and it confuses me.
I just find it interesting.
I should stop.
Because Evil William always has a lot more to say. It's as though he is spinning a fictitious tale that he's really into doing, as opposed to non-Evil William that just says, oh, nothing much happened. How are you?
Yeah, because he's a dork.
To be fair, you're also a dork.
Yeah, but I'm an evil dork at least. That makes me more interesting.
Evil dork.
You know, I mean, if when I go into a convenience store and there's a little thing of pennies there, look out. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you better hope there's more than one, because he will take and not leave, but he only takes one.
Well,
he's not a monster.
No, I'm not a monster, but
we're still a fucking civilization.
I am evil. I have the goatee. I've earned it.
Have you?
I have.
Have you really?
I've got the pennies to prove it. I keep them. I don't even spend them.
Never leave a penny anywhere. Not even to purchase things.
No, I keep them. I take that penny, and it's mine.
He's got an altar to pennies.
Hey, laugh if you want to, but everyone's got their thing. You've got your thing.
I've got a lot of things.
Okay, well, everybody's got their thing is what I'm saying.
I've got most people's things.
I shouldn't really care about what goes on over there, but it just really annoys me that we get together for stuff, and then it's this, and it's like, I'm totally thrown off. Why did we let these guys control our lives? It's not them, I guess. It's the hat.
It's a kind of magic.
I don't like magic.
Not even the laughter of a child?
Well, I'll have to think about that one.
But you don't like shitty magic.
Again, I don't think there's any other kind outside the whole laughter of a child thing.
Yes. No, that's what I was saying. You say you don't like magic. Unsure on the laughter of a child. Therefore, earlier you were specifically speaking about shitty magic.
Yeah. That's right.
This is possibly the most boring 10 minutes we have
ever had. I guess laughter of a child is okay. I mean, what's the child laughing about?
I assume at you.
Did the child just push another child in a puddle and they're laughing? That's pretty hilarious. I like that laughter of a child.
That's more evil than I expected from you. I thought we established literally the entirety of your evil was taking a penny and not leaving a
penny. I wouldn't push a kid in a puddle, even when I was a kid.
But non-evil William would not laugh at my another kid
penny.
Pushing a kid.
Why?
Because he's a dork.
I don't think you understand how this whole thing works. But the penny thing, that's my thing.
That is your thing.
Yeah, so.
That's your deal.
Yeah. And I'm going to get that penny. Whatever it takes. You don't know how many times, I look that clerk or that cashier, whatever, right in the face, and I just take that penny.
And I
put it right in their face, and I say, I'm taking this penny, and there's nothing you can do to stop me. And they don't. I just walk right out.
In the other universe, their cashiers aren't made out of meat.
I don't think that would matter to me. I'm ruthless. When I want that penny, I'm going to take it. You've seen me. You've seen the look I get in my eyes when I see those pennies. I just can't be stopped. But that's why I live over here and not over there. Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm just waiting to see where this finishes up.
Waiting? What are you waiting for?
I don't know. I'm intrigued.
You're intrigued.
I kind of just want to sit back for an hour and just watch what the fuck you do. The other difference between regular and evil William. Evil William might be high.
No. I don't do that. Pennies, that's my thing.
I joke about that.
But that doesn't mean when other people are being evil, I can't laugh or enjoy. Like when you do evil things, I think it's funny.
I think regular William thinks when
they're not
regular
things
Tony
I would
evil
do.
Things that he thinks of. So if I pushed a kid down into a puddle, you would laugh?
Oh, well, no, I probably wouldn't laugh at that. Another kid pushing a kid in a puddle, I probably... Well, it depends, though, on the situation. If the kid pushes the kid in the puddle and laughs, then I'll laugh. Because
the laughter
of a child.
I'll laugh if
as you
I
said,
push a kid
magical.
Into a puddle.
You will?
I will laugh.
Well, then maybe I would think that was funny.
Me and my shitty magic.
It's hard to say.
Laughter of an adult.
It's all about magic. The laughter of a child or someone who's young at heart, maybe. Such as yourself, although the goatee is kind of...
The doctors say my heart is older than the rest of me.
Of course, kids have goatees pretty young, so... I don't know. You know, these hypothetical situations, I'm really not very good at them.
No, you are not.
No, so I...
It's a trait you share throughout the multiverse.
Yeah.
William's not good with hypotheticals.
Not really.
So, hypothetically, should we get the hat?
Okay, let's get it over with.
All right. Now that everyone
I always say that, but it always takes an hour. It never
off.
Goes any faster.
Yeah, but we're already like 15 minutes in. 15 minutes of you talking about pennies.
It's my thing. Craig
Ferguson?
I don't know. Could be.
Hey.
But I don't know why the President of the United States would be sending us things in the... He's got better things to do.
Luckily, our Constitution allows for citizens not born in this country to be president.
Yeah? Oh, because they don't over there. comparisons, these comparisons we make with the other side. It's
driving also crazy. On their side, President Ferguson is a dude.
Are you making that one up?
No.
Ugh. How could they have a dude named Craig?
I just like to watch your improv skills. What does Craig have to say?
A dude named Craig. What is wrong with those people? Dear Minions of the Hat.
That's us today.
Please discuss fairy tales and their regular reinterpretation to fit the popular themes of the time. Fairy tales. Well,
I have a harder time with this. I don't know. You know more about this than I do.
I do?
I think so.
Oh.
I think I've heard you go on about this.
I have?
Don't we start with the fact that fairy tales originally, that there were no stories just for kids, right? Weren't you the one who told me about this?
I don't know. I don't. That doesn't
back sound... In the day, back in the day, stories were not specifically for children or for adults. Like, there was no such thing as...
Oh, no, yes, that's correct. Children's well, I mean, stories. That's what it seems to be true, yeah. Right.
And part of the squeaky cleaning of Grimm's fairy tales in particular was to make them kid-focused.
Well, in terms of how kid was defined in the era that the Disney fairy tales were.
Baby goats. No, this is what I mean. You know more about this than me.
Well, there are some people who I think very simplistically say, you know, they look at myths even or stories that we find from archaeological records or from pre or like hunter-gatherer societies that exist now. And these stories that they tell each other, and they tend to think that they, one reason they were told and invented were for social control, because they're trying to interpret the telling of stories as a survival adaptation or some crazy, stupid stuff like that. But the fact of the matter is, human beings tell stories because it's their nature to do so. It's not about any kind of survival benefit or anything else. It's just what human beings do, and stories. I mean, you can imagine the very first stories ever that humans told just being about what they observe happening. Like, this is what's going on.
And to explain things.
Sure, to explain things. And as they explain things, they're probably going to, you know, it's easy to imagine thinking of the wind and the rain and all these things that they experience in their day being like people, and then they interact with them like people, and those forces and objects interact with each other like people, and just basically talking about it like they're all people. It's not because these people are stupid or primitive or any number of other things. It's just because this is a way of describing everything that works, and it's accurate. Actually, it's not simple or childish. It's actually very sophisticated.
I feel you've gone back a little far.
No, I realize that, but this is kind of my understanding of storytelling generally. It doesn't really fit in with this paradigm of, well, you know, people told stories to fit into some kind of, to survive they had to tell these stories. Fairy tales, as we know them, and, you know, that's going to be like Grimm or basically the way a lot of people took folk tales and sort of froze them into literature form in the 18th and 19th century, many times they do have this quality of, you know, there's disobedient kids and there's consequences to it and so on. And you do kind of get the impression that they were told to dissuade children from going into the woods and getting themselves hurt or anything else. But you also get the impression that perhaps before that, they were just stories about spirits in the woods and magical creatures and leprechauns and fairies and whatever that didn't really have anything to do with any moral lesson or trying to scare children or anything else. They were just stories that people told, just like people have been telling stories for the last 200,000 years. But it does seem that at some point in European history, when we talk about European fairy tales and folk tales, that there somehow there came to be this moral angle. And a lot of times there are clear Christian elements in the fairy tale that lead you to think, well, Christianity might have brought that into it, you know,
yeah.
trying to get kids to be obedient and to, you know, be good kids and stuff. And so in a way, that's one of the first things in history we see in European folktales and fairy tales, where stories that were probably told for centuries, or like the stories that were told for centuries, actually were changed a little bit, tweaked a little bit to affect some kind of social and cultural goal, rather than just to tell a story. You follow what I'm saying?
And clearly that's still happening. Nowadays it's even more obvious.
Right, and I'm not so sure for the first 200,000 years of human existence that that was the rule. I mean, certainly it happened. Probably for as long as humans have existed, there have been stories told to exert social control. But the rule, I think, was that stories were just told to explain things, to entertain.
Yeah, yeah.
There wasn't any specific control aspect of it, or any purpose for the stories other than human beings like them.
Well, and you get this in other forms of art as well. They're definite. If you look at Western and European painting through the centuries, there's times where certain things were okay, and then there's other times where suddenly that was pornographic,
and then
you couldn't do it. And it's not linear.
Right.
It goes up and down, and various depictions of this were okay, depictions of this were not.
Well, and I think it's really important to understand that for any art form, storytelling, well, all art forms are storytelling, in my opinion, but for any art form to have no other purpose but that it pleases human beings, that's all the purpose it needs. You don't have to find some kind of weird sort of control or survival reason for it to exist to justify why it ever came about.
I feel like you're trying to defend Michael Bay's Transformers.
No way. I hated those. But a lot of the fairy tales that were sort of solidified into written form in the 18th and 19th centuries had already been sort of taken, I think, through the influence of Christianity and turned into things that reinterpreted already to fit the, I guess, child-rearing needs of the people who were telling them, mostly to children, which I find interesting because, again, for most of human history, as you just pointed out, a lot of these stories weren't necessarily geared for children. I mean, people didn't necessarily think of, well, there's adults and there's kids and we tell stories differently for each group. People just told stories to everybody the same. And you do kind of get a sense that the fairy tales that Grimm captured and that, other people captured when they started writing them down were something that adults were telling children for like bedtime stories and things like that. So,
but outside,
I don't know when that happened.
If we beyond the whole, this used to just be a story of weird shit that happened, and now it's a story about how you should obey your parents or whatever. Outside of that additional angle, there's just elements. They used to be darker, creepier, more sexualized in some cases, more. The example that always sticks to me is there's an earlier version of Red Riding Hood where before it is revealed that it's the wolf, she gets naked, she burns all her clothes, she gets in the bed, she tells the wolf she has to go to the bathroom, and the wolf tells her to go ahead and just pee right in the bed. And
yeah, I've heard those things
that's
too.
That's some weird shit.
Okay, but...
And that's some... And even in to grown-ups, that's some weird shit, but... There's a time period where that kind of stuff, which can fit, because to a certain degree, Little Red Riding Hood is a horror story of a sort. And there's a certain point at which they decided, oh, no, that's not okay for kids.
Well...
Which was also attached to, okay, these stories apparently are for kids.
No, but I also think that you're on the right track here in terms of... I think, you know, when we're looking at the reinterpretation of these things to fit the popular theme, appropriateness for children or the purpose it serves for children is kind of the thing that's governing how it changes.
And it got, so you're saying at this time period, people started saying, think of the children, which in the past nobody bothered to fucking
say.
Well,
there were a couple things that happened. You had, I think, the influence of Christianity, which wanted to turn everything into a moral
thing. Yes.
But also, you had the... you had the Age of Reason, you know, and Enlightenment and all this stuff, where people were, they were beginning not to believe in these things. Uh-huh. So it started to become something that, well, you don't tell fairy tales for adults because adults don't believe in those things. But kids still do. You see what I'm saying? So this is going to entertain the children, and this becomes entertainment for naive kids. And, you know, those two things working together, and before you know it, the whole folklore fairy tale thing begins to evolve according to what the greater culture thinks is appropriate for kids.
I see.
And that's and Disney's just following that, you know, following that same path, except adding to that the commercial value of it, you know.
Well, which is ultimately the thing. Ultimately, they're not worried about the kids. Ultimately, they're worried that people who are worried about the kids will disapprove and not let their kids see it and not spend the money on it.
Yeah.
Ultimately, if they could make hardcore pornography and be convinced that their market would buy it, they wouldn't care.
No, you're right about that. And you know how you can tell? Because of the clothes they try to sell to little girls.
Oh, Jesus.
Given that a lot of the clothing that they put out there for parents to buy makes the little girl look like a stripper or something. I mean, and parents buy it, well, there you go. They don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care. But, so yeah.
Well, that just becomes a thing now where, and it was probably true back then too, not only are you tailoring it to what you believe the social norm is at the time, but it becomes a feedback loop because you start inventing what the social norm is.
Now, as it turns out, I've been reading, because as a gift, I received a book of Irish fairy tales that I hadn't read before and that I didn't know about. And what I find interesting about those so far is that almost every single one of them start. It's an adult who's having the experience in the story.
Yeah.
And almost every single one of them starts with the person being drunk. And what I find interesting about this is I'm getting the impression as I keep reading them that as a person who hears the story, like you're being told the story by another adult, I'm getting the impression that even though it doesn't say this outright, I'm getting the impression you're supposed to wonder if the person who experienced this, the drunk person who experienced this, really experienced it,
or
it was just something, some hallucination they experienced in a drunken stupor.
I hurt my finger. It's a little swollen.
Yeah, I see that. Which is interesting because in these fairy tales, even though a lot of them would be appropriate for kids, they almost sound like a joke you would tell.
If you were
in a pub and, oh, you know, so-and-so, he got drunk and this happened and little people and all this stuff. And so it becomes sort of an amusing anecdote to tell about this guy and how he sees things and experiences strange things
fucking
when he gets drunk.
Darby O'Gill.
Yeah.
Now that is something I would like to look into, is the cultural history of drunkenness in Ireland. Because it's obviously, it's a weird cliche and racial stereotype at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But as with a lot of stuff with the Irish, because of the way racism is at this point, the Irish are just sort of white people now. Like, it's one of those that's kind of considered okay. And it's also one of those that people are like, well, but it's sort of true, you know. And the thing is, and it's not new. I mean, Ireland is a very old society at this point, and it goes back a long way. So I really want to know where is this coming from and what has this meant? Because theoretically, from the way it's portrayed, the Irish were saying this about themselves back in the day where there weren't too many other people hanging around. Like, there wasn't a lot of immigration or anything yet. So in Irish society, they were saying this about themselves.
Yeah, it's...
And so I really want to know, and again, this is me curious from a cultural perspective. In no way am I saying that I have any knowledge as to whether or not Irish people tend to drink more or not, but it's a cultural artifact, and it goes back way, like, here's the thing. Take any stereotype that exists in the U.S. about black people. First of all, half of them are modern. If you go back to, you know, the 19th century or even to the slave times, a lot of them aren't there. Right. Part of it is just the nature of the time.
Right,
but,
right.
But also, none of them go back to Africa.
No.
They're not sitting around Africa saying, you know, we're better at basketball. Like, this this was not coming up.
No, but the Irish are telling, like I said, almost all of these stories, someone's drunk, someone's... And not only that, but the storyteller is often expressing their enthusiasm for drink and things like
that. And alcohol consumption is a major aspect to the culture. Yeah. And I'm very curious about that, because I don't see that... ritualized alcohol consumption shows up in other cultures, but the nature... I'm just very curious. I don't know enough about it, and I find it very interesting.
Now, a lot of these tales do have moral aspects to them, in the sense that a lot of times the fairy entity is trying to teach them a lesson.
Yes.
Because they're not very nice, or...
Or in a lot of cases, it's just learn how to fucking count.
Well, yes, or
a lot of I said three wishes.
Or it's not, or you know, drinking too much and being careless and stupid is not a good thing, and you do stupid things when you do this. So some of the things that, some of the time the fairy folk are like, they're giving a person their, you know, their just desserts for some stupid thing or bad thing or whatever they've done. And yet, again, as I say, it still almost sounds like a story you tell in the pub to get everybody laughing at somebody.
And then you get into the fact that Ireland is a Catholic country and became a Catholic. It did not start out as a Catholic country.
No.
And so you get a weird blur of local folklore and Christianity mixed together.
Well, yeah, in these stories, the clergy are very powerful relative to... I mean, these fairy folk are pretty powerful. They have all this magic, but they're totally scared of the clergymen. And the clergymen, whatever the clergy says, the fairy folk have to do. And it's always...
that one story of the drunk guy who caught Jesus by the toe, and then he had to show him where his pot of gold was.
But the moral is always a very Christian...
Seriously, that image is just awesome. Just imagine, little dude, I caught you, Jesus. Now you got to show me where your gold is.
The moral is always a Christian, pious moral, you know, always. So, yeah, that's definitely part of it. And it's really, it's very interesting to read. And you start to wonder, well, what were these stories like before? And what did they... Because, you know, a lot of these fairy creatures were arguably part of the Irish religion before Christianity came along. So these were experiences that they believed were real, and they were having them. And when you read these fairy tales, it's not clear that the speaker believes they actually happened or anything like that. It's just kind of a joke. But maybe it's not. I don't know. It's hard to tell.
I wish I had some sort of art form. I really need to create that as an actual thing. I need to draw a comic or write a story or make a film about drunk Irishman catching Jesus, little tiny Jesus, make him show him where his gold is. But then, Jesus outsmarts him.
Oh, well, of course.
And gets away.
Does this Jesus also make shoes? Maybe it can involve shoes.
I don't know. Possibly.
Because, you know, leprechauns were shoemakers. That was their thing.
All right.
So
where'd they get the gold? Selling shoes?
No, you know what? I was just reading about that, and now I've forgotten. I was just reading about it, and I've forgotten where they got it. I mean, they've been around for a long time. I mean, you know, you get gold places. I don't think they sold the shoes.
But then Jesus lured me into the ring of mushrooms, and I fell asleep for 30 years.
You have to guess my name. You're Jesus. No, seriously, go ahead and guess. I can see you're Jesus.
Yeah,
you've got thorns and you've got the things in your hand. Come on, you're Jesus. No, I'm not Jesus.
No.
Look, I'm a lot smaller than Jesus.
No. You have to guess my name. Is it Tom? No. Is it Phyllis? No, of course it's not Phyllis. Jesus Christ.
You should guess Craig.
To be fair, for the longest, for the proper way to do that, you should guess more than just Tom and Phyllis. You wouldn't get real frustrated after that. Tom, Phyllis, I didn't really think it was either of those. Like, you need to guess for a while, and then you go, Jesus Christ, and then you win. And Jesus has to give you his goal. Oh, God, we're losing so many listeners right now. I don't know who they are, but, oh.
Well, good.
Do you think we really get to stop if we have no listeners?
I have no idea. Yeah. And I mean, we've decided they can't die, or else we'll just have to do this every time.
But those guys, yes.
But no listeners? Maybe.
Well, no listeners theoretically means there's nothing in the hat. But some asshole listener could just keep writing in but not listen.
Oh, because they don't like us.
I feel like there might already be some of those.
That sounds like something evil that someone over here would do.
All right, let's
go. Not me, though, because my thing's pennies.
Yes. You listen and write in, and then just take pennies.
No, I don't do that.
Pennies. All right.
And the laughter of children, but I don't think that counts.
This one is from Azure Talon. There's 3 exclamation points after his name, so I assume you would say it louder, or at least more.
Seriously, who would name a guy Craig?
Emphatically.
I mean, every Craig I've ever known was a girl. Cute girls, too.
Well, then there was that one Craig that was kind of both. Anyway. Azure Talon, with 3 exclamation points, says, Dear dissonant and confused forced voices of the magical talking hat.
Oh, that's a good one.
I do like that. That's nice.
That fits us.
Yes. What is the one thing you'd like to change about the world?
Well, our world's
yeah, we're
great.
We basically just would like to stop doing this podcast. Yeah.
Our world is perfect. And what we'd like to change about that world is we would like for it to not exist anymore.
Yes.
That covers it. I suppose we...
It's hard to make discreet what's one thing, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, you know... okay, assuming I'm over there for a minute. World peace. Is world peace, like, one thing?
I think so.
Is it constant? Is it just going to be, like, constant world? But, like, nobody will ever fight ever anything?
Well, I mean, you know, if world peace... doesn't necessarily mean people won't fight. It just means they won't pull out guns and shoot each other in the face.
That seems so specific.
Well, I think it's easier for people to imagine a world where people don't pull out guns and shoot each other in the face rather than a world where people don't have any conflict at all.
But what about where people pull out guns and shoot each other in the junk? Is that still world peace?
No. No.
See, that's what I'm saying. I feel like you're a little specific.
I'm not trying to be specific. I'm shoot each other at all, okay?
Okay. So, swords are fine.
No violence at all.
Yeah?
No.
Isn't that what I said?
Physical.
Yeah, so we can't physically fight
No violence at all. No violence at all. So you have a conflict and disagreement, and you might even, you know...
You can yell a lot.
Maybe you can yell, but you don't, like... You don't, like, instead of having an argument with the person, just say something you know is going to hurt their feelings. You don't even do that.
Yeah, I can't even do that?
No.
I can't even go to war with their feelings?
No.
What about economic sanctions? Seriously, this is hard.
Well, you know. But, yes, you can think about it like that, and you can... make it hard. Or you can just say, I want world peace. Whatever that means in realistic terms where there's just the absolute minimum amount of you know, bad stuff going on as possible.
See, it gets all monkey's paw then.
Well, I don't know.
Like, then you're the last person alive.
Oh, no, come on.
And you try and pull out a gun and shoot yourself in the face. And you can't.
No.
So instead you just shoot yourself in the junk. The end. Worst Twilight Zone episode ever. They never even aired
it. Shut up. No, no, no. I mean, as a one thing that both William and me, William with the goatee, have in common is we're anarchists. So, you know, we are always going to be in favor of something happening so that society gradually and safely transforms into a thing where you don't need large-scale governments and the corporations are all gone and stuff. And I do think the world can exist like that, and I think it would be better off. It would not be a world without conflict. It would not even be a world without violent conflict, but it wouldn't have any more violent conflict than it has now, and I think that it would have quite a bit less. So that's something that I would change, but that's also a kind of a big thing, you know.
So,
that doesn't,
so you're saying you don't believe we are currently in a state of world peace, and your definition of a state of world peace is one that probably has less conflict than now, rather than more.
Because I'm with you on that. Yes, but all more in the context of the way you're talking about it, I guess I would have to say I don't really believe in, you know, world peace like that.
Well, then what are you going to change?
I just said.
That's too long for, that's not one thing.
Okay.
You only got one thing.
Well,
take the goatees off the pizzas.
There's a story that I'm working on. You know, a series of stories.
Evil stories.
That I would really like to, you know, produce in the way that's best for them to get out there and make some kind of cultural impact. If I could do that one thing, I think I would be very happy. I don't know what it would mean. I don't know what the implications would be, but I know for me that's something that I would feel like I could do, I did do, and I'd be like, okay, I took a shot at trying to do something that would make the world a better place. This was my best shot, and I feel comfortable with it. And if it comes to nothing, well, then that's just how it is.
On behalf of all the starving children in the world, fuck you.
Why?
We're hungry, the starving children, and you could change one thing in the world, and you changed it to make your story better.
No. See, in this context, I'm talking about one thing that I can do, and that, you know, I can't reasonably feed all the hungry children in the world.
When's the last time you heard anybody talk about Darfur?
I don't know.
Did it just stop being a thing, or did we just ignore it?
No, there's lots of stuff going on. It's not just, well, there's, no, it didn't stop being a thing. And it's not that people are ignoring it. It's just, you know,
It was a big fad for a while.
I guess so.
And then it was a big joke for a while. Like, that was the comparison.
We went from, because ending world hunger is also not one thing.
Yeah, that one I can do, because then I just make magical boxes that have food in them. You said one thing,
and so I realized, okay, one thing is what I can do, one thing, and this is what I want to do, the one thing.
With the food world makers not from one thing. Star Trek, you can do that. If you got enough of them, which you can make more of them.
Yeah, but according to Star Trek, with that and just a couple other technologies, you can get the world peace thing going too.
I don't know about that. Have you seen the new ones? It's not that peaceful.
Ending world hunger is not one thing. If world peace, or if my anarchist vision of the future is not one thing, then ending world hunger is also not one thing.
William would write a book.
It's not a book. It's a story that I truly believe if I could actually get it done and get it out there, that it would have some kind of, it would make some kind of cultural statement. Whether or not it would have a long-term impact, I don't know. But I do think it would at least make a cultural statement that I would feel like I did something, you know, right, instead of had a life where I did nothing to make a big difference.
I would cure cancer.
But you can't cure cancer.
If I could change one thing in the world, we'd have a cure for cancer.
Right, but based on the rules you put forth... I thought you were talking about something that was reasonable for you to achieve.
No.
because curing cancer is also not exactly one thing. There's lots of cancers. There's lots of...
No, but we have a wonder drug now. Took care of them all. No, because here's the thing. If it's reasonable for me to achieve and I would change it, then I'll do that. Clearly, if I could change one thing in the world, I'm not going to say lose weight, because if I really could and I would, then I would, and I didn't. See? If you could change one thing in the world, you'd have a better book.
But I could write a better book than the books I've written. I mean, you know, I could do all
this
stuff.
I know you can, and if that's what you would do if you could, therefore you are, or you will, or you would
have. That's right. What is one thing you'd like to change about the world?
So you're essentially saying, what's one thing you're going to change?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to. It's what I'm going to try to.
Do.
But doesn't that mean it's what I'd like to change about the world?
If you could. And you're already determined.
What is one thing you'd like to change about the world is all it says. It doesn't say if you could or couldn't.
I would like to cure cancer. I would like to do that.
Well, I would like to do that too.
No, too late. You wrote a book.
No, I would like to do all those things.
No, but of all
the things I'd like to do...
You wrote a book. I'm curing cancer.
There's one thing I'd like to do that I might actually can do, and so that's what I'm going to try to do.
Might actually can do?
Yeah.
That's no.
No, yes no. It is. That's perfect grammar.
No, we got it set, people. This is how... And this is on the evil universe. This is evil, evil Tony talking with the extra facial hair. I'd cure cancer. William would write a book. And it's not even a book about how I cured cancer, which you'd think would be a good topic.
It's not a book. It's more like a, I don't know what it is. But
graphic novel.
It's not that I wouldn't like to do other
puppet
things.
Show.
But this is one thing I'd like to do that I actually probably can do.
I also can cure cancer.
No, you can't.
Can't.
Well, then do it.
I'm working on it.
You are not.
I'm busy recording a podcast.
Such a liar.
As soon as this episode is done, I'm going to cure cancer.
I would like for all kinds of needless suffering to stop in the world, but I can't do anything about those things.
No, I'm going to cure cancer.
But this is something I'd like to do that maybe I actually can do.
You'll see.
That could make a positive impact on the world if I do it right. So that's
why I say that. We have a mystery episode. You will be able to tell people... Our universe doesn't have cancer anymore.
Our universe doesn't have cancer.
Anymore, because I cured it.
No. There's never been cancer here. Now, you pulled that. You see, you play games with the listeners over there talking about this stuff.
I say, do you see any cancer? Well, then clearly it's working. Was that our first question?
That was our second question.
All right, then it's your turn.
Okay.
We don't have books over here either. Shows what you know.
This is Azure Talon again.
Is there 3 exclamation points?
Mm-hmm.
So it's extra emphatic, enthusiastic Azure Talon.
And he does the whole dissonant, confused, forced voices of the magical talking hat.
I like it even better this time.
What is your opinion?
It's growing on me.
What is your opinion on the book Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus? Of course, that's true over here, but I think I know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
He's talking about the book. They're not from Mars or Venus over there. Over there, that book
is metaphoric.
Yeah, exactly. And the truth is, even though men are from Mars and women are from Venus over here, we get along like...
It's pretty good.
Yeah, we don't have any... It doesn't seem to matter.
When I see women, which is not very often.
Right.
I saw Craig the other day.
Yeah. Oh, how was she?
She's good. From Venus.
But over there, it's a big thing, you know, how men and women are different. And, of course, it's probably obvious. Again, this is something that I agree with the other William on. I think these notions are kind of ridiculous, and I don't think they're based in any empirical evidence.
No, they are not. But here's the deal. Men and women in, let's just stick with, specifically in U.S.
Mm-hmm.
society.
Right.
But really in sort of Western society are, I believe, completely artificially socially constructed towards certain behavior patterns as a rule. Not 100%, but as a rule, our society is built such that we get acculturated in certain ways, different if you're a man versus if you're a woman.
Mm-hmm.
This often, not always, can lead to certain perspectives and behavior patterns, which again, were completely artificially created. Consequently, a book like Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus can, in a purely practical sense, in a great many instances, lead to improved communication between individuals who are severely acculturated into this model of male and ones who are severely acculturated into this model of female. There is that distinct possibility. There is a practical application. I have talked to people who have read that book and found it helpful in their communications with people.
Well, right. I mean,
but
given already the acculturation that you're talking about, given that the culture has programmed men to be this way, women to be this way to begin with,
yes,
there are certain protocols and rules that you can look at and speak to and say, all right, given that you've been socialized this way, man, and given that you've been socialized this way, woman, if I share this information with you or these strategies with you on a practical level, they should work and you should be able to get along better.
And lead to greater satisfaction in your communication and in your
sure.
relationship.
Okay.
But it also, by its very ability to do that, propagates said acculturation.
Which one could debate whether or not, I mean, some people would argue, would answer that your assertion that way and say, well, even if that's true, Tony, so what? So what? I mean, it's a culture, right? This culture says,
well,
this culture makes men and women this way, and so that's just the way men and women are, so who cares? What's wrong with it?
And, well, but, and you and I both full on aren't cool with that.
No, we're not.
For a variety of reasons, largely in the fact that, regardless of what it is, I'm not even talking about the specific one here, the very concept, when you create a social conformity, a social hegemony, to the degree that people are like, oh, women are just like that, men are just like that, they're born that way. When you make it that ingrained, regardless of what it is, it makes it incredibly difficult for people who, A, don't feel that way, or B, don't want to feel that way, or don't want to be that way.
Well, right, and also,
it makes it hard for me to wear a goddamn dress on the street.
Well, no, but
there we go.
That's true, but also, the big problem with this whole gender thing is, I mean, set aside the fact that you can tell if men and women weren't socialized this way to begin with, they wouldn't be having these communication problems to begin with, necessitating a book like this.
Not these problems.
No.
Yeah, that is true. It is addressing problems that are artificially created.
Right.
But if we're stuck that way, it's potentially helpful.
Although I don't think we are stuck that way to begin with, but, and this is why I say that, because a big problem with this gender construction and gender acculturation and all that stuff is a little bit different than other types of cultural conditioning, in that there you only get two.
Well,
yeah, pretty much.
No, here you only get two.
This is what I'm saying. Here in the West, you only get two, and they're fairly mutually exclusive. I mean, there's some overlap
a little bit.
But they're fairly mutually so. These are three problems I'm enumerating here. There's only two. They're fairly mutually exclusive, and one is given privileges that the other one isn't, and the other is oppressed in some ways.
Yes.
Against the privileged class. So putting those three things together, it's a travesty, really, and nobody wins, because the men, even in spite of their privilege, are often feel like there are certain emotions they can't express, certain relationships they can't have.
They are also restricted.
And women, of course, suffer not just qualitatively different, but I think in a greater extent because, you know, they not only do they not have the privileges that men have, but they also are oppressed in certain specific ways, today. So this cultural practice is tyrannical, really, in a lot of ways. And in my view, if there's one thing you can pass a judgment on in terms of culture, it's when an element is tyrannical or not. You know, like in some cultures where, you know, they practice on young girls genital mutilation or whatever. You're not going to convince me that how dare I judge that culture for their practices because that's a tyrannical practice.
Yeah, that's
bad in every culture, and I'm not going to apologize for quote unquote judging that. And the gender binary is that kind of thing. I don't think you can just excuse it and say, well, this is the way our culture is because pretty much nobody is okay with it. I mean, some people are more okay with it than others. Some people can go their whole lives never questioning it and they seem totally comfortable with it. But I can guarantee you at some point in their life, they had a private conversation with someone and they've talked about how difficult it is to be a man or a woman in this culture. And it's been hard for them too. And for some people, it's really hard.
Yeah.
It's oppressively hard. It's commit suicide hard. And that can't be tolerated.
No, I do feel like you're saying on one option we have redefine the society, which I'm in favor of, and then on the other option we have this book.
Well, no, but
and this is what I'm saying. I'm not saying but this is the thing. No, I'm talking about this book. I'm not saying we can't do anything about this, so let's have this book. I'm saying, insofar as if anything happens, it's going to be a long and slow struggle to get there.
And if this can help people
in the meantime,
no,
that can be a benefit. But here's the thing.
I don't disagree with that.
I go to all that trouble.
I totally agree with that.
To then counter that by saying, except insofar as you think this reinforces the paradigm.
Well, let me put it this way.
Because then it's bad.
I know, but let me put it this way. I do think, and maybe there's more faith involved in here than actual you know, empirical observation. I do think that people who have been helped with this book could also be helped in a far better way by learning how to overcome all of that gender crap in the first place.
And there could be better books. There could be books that essentially do both.
Mm.
There could be books that say, here's how you would communicate with someone in that situation, and here's why you're both doing that. And maybe you don't need to do that anymore.
Well, and I have seen books that talk about just conversation styles and communication styles and things like that. And maybe the book will mention, in our culture, women tend to be like this and men tend to be like that, but don't judge too quickly because a lot of men are also this way and a lot of women are also that way, and it's a spectrum. And see, I respect that approach a lot more than just to say, well, it's men and women and they were born that way and it's in the genes and it's biological. And
the title should actually
be, because those are all lies.
The neighborhood of Venus tends to have a lot of women in it, and the neighborhood of Mars tends to have a lot of men there.
In America and the West in general.
And, full disclosure, at least for me, and I'm guessing for you, neither of us have read this book.
Well, excerpts from it I've seen, but yes, I haven't read it. I have read other books that do a similar thing, and they talk about communication and conversation styles and things like that, and they do say statistically men are more like this and women are more like this, but they're very careful to point out that that shouldn't be taken as a stereotype, and that's specifically in the West. And I have a lot more respect for that than...
In general, any book that has the premise of, this has always been an issue, and now I'm going to explain it all, for any value of all...
Always been an issue for all of humankind, for all
for
time.
For any value of this,
I
am skeptical of these days, and they come around.
Mm-hmm.
There are ones for communicating with the opposite sex. There are ones for... all sorts of ones involving money, all sorts of ones involving health or weight loss.
Right, but you know,
they come around all the time. And to me, these are very similar. To me, Suzanne Summers' weight loss book and Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus are essentially the same thing.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. But see, another thing I don't like about books like this, and I'm pretty sure this book does this, at least I've been told that or been shown excerpts that seem to be making these claims, is any scientific claims they make about, you know, well, it's in the biology, it's men and women's brains are different and things like that. And the thing about it is, if you follow these studies the way I do, you find there's nothing to them. They don't prove anything that they're asserting. They make headlines. A lot of times these studies are never, even though they get into a peer-reviewed journal, their results are never, no one even tries to duplicate them. But sometimes the people who do can't. There's just not a lot there.
Any statistical evidence, always the creeping variables are amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the differences between the sexes, biologically speaking, so far from a scientific perspective, this is what we have. Your average guy produces sperm, your average woman produces eggs, and the sperm and the eggs make a fetus and all this stuff. That's the extent of it. You know, the whole thing about testosterone making significant personality differences and make you suited towards certain personality types and jobs just doesn't hold up.
What about the upper body strength versus and spatial orientation stuff?
Well, not the spatial orientation stuff, not so much. Now, the things about size, like you said, upper body strength and musculature and stuff like that. Well, I mean, again, well, those are fairly obvious.
But also, again, and this is the thing, that's statistically significant. It's not individually significant.
No, exactly.
It does not mean that. It means that for all men, there is a tendency towards greater upper body strength. It does not mean that this man and this woman were guaranteed this man's going to be able to lift more.
That's right. Or, and another thing to consider there is, that doesn't mean that in a no-holds-barred fight between this man and this woman, the man's going to win.
Well, yes, absolutely.
So, but it certainly doesn't mean there's nothing about the sex a person is born with, and getting away from any debate about what that means, there's no scientific evidence to suggest that sex determines anything other than the role you might play in procreation. It doesn't determine personality. It doesn't determine job fitness. It doesn't determine what jobs you're going to want to have.
Yeah.
It doesn't determine how nurturing you're going to be. It doesn't determine how assertive you're going to be, unless the culture, you know, has some of that stuff going
yes,
on
yes,
in it.
Unless you get raised to believe that.
Yeah, right.
Or get raised in such a way that that is forced upon you.
Right. And it's and there's also lots of scientific evidence to suggest that it's, you know, your sex is never going to determine those things. Culture alone does, which is fine, and cultures can do that. I don't really have a problem with gender per se, and from a sociological perspective, I think gender plays a certain role in the amorous relationship, but the fact that there are two of them and they're defined so strictly, that's defined on biological lines. They claim they are.
Yes.
They aren't actually connected to biology, but they claim they are.
No,
yes.
But yeah, I think socially speaking, right, especially up to this point, they are defined on biological lines.
But if people realized that gender was a more fluid thing and there were like lots of them, they wouldn't really worry about it anymore, and they wouldn't force people to fit into one or the other. So it's really the gender binary that's the problem, character of it.
Men are from their parents. Women are from their parents. We are over time. We need to stop this so we can go do the thing we were going to do. So
thanks, Azurtown and Craig, who might be a guy, maybe. I don't know.
Azurtown twice.
Yep.
Even Evil William thanks people.
Well, sure. I mean, that's just courteous.
So remember, keep watching the skis. They're not going to know what time it
is. I don't care.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.